Here's what happens when fathers fail to step up to the plate regarding abortion, the church, and the state.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Father Frank Pavone. Father Pavone is the National Director of Priests for Life and has traveled to all 50 states, sharing his message on the importance of life. He has been a partner with Elizabeth's New Life Center for many years, and we are so happy to have him with us again tonight. Please join me in welcoming to the stage Father Frank Pavone.
All right, thank you so much. It is a joy to be here, brothers and sisters. It is a joy to be back in the great state of Ohio, especially in an election year. It is a joy to be once again with our friends in Elizabeth's New Life Center. And I say friends very, very literally, because when I first began my full-time work in pro-life with Priests for Life, and it's been exactly 25 years, by the way, that I've been in this position. Right from the beginning, Vivian and Steve were two of the first leaders and activists that I met, and our partnership, friendship, collaboration has not only continued but grown over these 2.5 decades. So it is a tremendous joy and a blessing for us, and that's why I've been looking forward to tonight so much. We collaborate not only directly, but also I want you to understand how much of a part of the work you're supporting tonight we are already involved in, myself personally and our team at Priests for Life. And let me first, by the way, give you the greetings of our team. Those of you who follow our work know that we are a family of ministries. We have, for example, the Silent No More campaign, about which I'm going to say a little bit tonight in light of our theme on the Father's Masterpiece. But Silent No More gives moms, dads, families who have lost children to abortion the opportunity to not only find healing, but to speak out and share their experience. So our executive director, Janet Morana, has co-founded Silent No More. We have our Rachel's Vineyard worldwide retreat program. It's the largest ministry in the world for healing after abortion. So Teresa and Kevin Burke, the Alveda King, niece of Martin Luther King Jr., she's on our team. Full-time spreading the message that the civil rights movement of today is the pro-life movement, and she's doing a marvelous job with that. We've got Brian Kemper, our youth outreach director, is actually here with me tonight. Brian, just wave so everybody sees who you are. And Brian works full-time not only around the country but around the world, mobilizing young people in the pro-life effort. Part of our team also is Marie Smith. She is the wife of the hero in the House of Representatives, Congressman Chris Smith, and she does our international outreach with legislators of other countries, our work at the United Nations, many activities at the Vatican. And then, of course, we have other priests who are, like myself, assigned full-time to this work of fighting abortion. So Father Dennis Wild, Father Stephen Imbarato, I bring you the greetings and the pledge of collaboration of all this fantastic team of leaders that comprise the Priests for Life family. And I say that very deliberately, because they do know of the work that is being done by Elizabeth New Life Center. They know of the support that you all provide. And we collaborate in a number of different ways, as I said, not only directly, but indirectly. For example, the work of Heartbeat International, Vivian referred to. We're very close partners with Heartbeat, are present at their conferences, speaking and teaching and helping the directors and volunteers of centers nationwide and worldwide to do a better job in saving these lives and to become as professional and as effective as you can see from tonight alone, not to mention all the other things you already know about Elizabeth New Life Center. You can see the professionalism, the fruit that it bears, and that's no accident. It's a lot of hard work, but it also takes the wisdom, and Vivian and her team have this wisdom, of being able to reach out and take the hand of others who are serving the centers throughout the country and around the world. So through Heartbeat International, that takes place. Through NIFLA, the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates, we work very closely with NIFLA, and we're at their side during the course of the recent Supreme Court case that they won. They won for all of us to protect the pregnancy centers from the onslaught, the constant attacks from the abortion industry. All of that to say that it is really a joy, personal joy, for me to be here with you tonight. Brothers and sisters, the work that you are doing to save these lives, those 2,400 babies, we saw that figure up on the screen just moments ago, this work is the most important work on earth. There is no exaggeration. This movement, the pro-life movement, is the most important human rights, civil rights movement of our time. Not only because it is saving lives, and what more can we do, what better can we do for somebody than to save their life? And don't let the term pro-life, by the way, be diluted in your mind. In a sense, you can make the argument that any issue is a pro-life issue. I mean, fixing potholes on the streets and highways is a pro-life issue, because if you leave the holes there, you know, someone can get hurt or killed. Any issue, if it's an issue at all, is an issue only because it has some impact on human life. But don't let the term pro-life be hijacked. The work we're doing here is something that arises from a very specific need, a very specific problem. And it is, brothers and sisters, the biggest problem that our nation faces, that our church faces, that we as individuals face. And that is the problem that an entire segment of our human family, an entire segment of our population, has been deprived of their most fundamental right, which is the right to life itself. This movement is called the pro-life movement, not because it pretends to address every pro-life issue under the sun. You can't. You can have the right position, the right attitude on all the issues, but you can't be actively addressing every issue. That's not a movement. This movement is based on a very specific need, a very specific problem. The protection of the lives of human beings in the first 9 months of their development was taken away by a 1973 Supreme Court decision, Roe versus Wade, which unfortunately, in its central holding, is still in effect now. And that has unleashed on America and on the world the single largest human disaster, the single largest cause of death and violence that the world has ever seen. Some 60 million lives taken just on American soil since this disastrous decision, the most disastrous decision, not only of the United States Supreme Court, but of any court at any time in history. This is the damage that it has done just by looking at the numbers. You look at the numbers, nothing takes more human life than abortion. But not only is it arithmetic, it's logic that this is the most urgent issue to address. Because my friends, if you don't protect a person's life, you can't protect any of their other rights. Now, I said I'm happy to be in Ohio because it's an election year. Yes, I say that very deliberately. You have a role to play, not only for your state, but for the whole nation in every election. And brothers and sisters, when it comes to that dimension of the pro-life movement, we've got to consider the absurdity of someone coming, standing up, saying that he or she is a public servant, that he or she has a great education plan, or a health care plan, or a plan to keep people safe from crime or terrorism, or a plan for immigrants, or a plan for peace on earth, it is an absurdity for somebody to say that we should listen to them because they are in favor of all those things, but at the same time are in favor of it being legal to take away a child's life. Because when you take away the life of that child in the womb, guess what? You have taken away her education. You have taken away her health care. You have taken away her right to be protected from violence. In fact, you have imposed violence on her. And never will we learn, for those who oppose the death penalty, never will we learn to protect the guilty if we have forgotten how to protect the innocent. Never will we learn to welcome the immigrant across the borders of the United States if we can't welcome our own children across the border of the womb. Never will we learn to feed the poor if we can't feed the child in the womb. Never will we learn to maintain peace between nations if we cannot maintain peace between a mother and her own child. No human right, no cause of social justice will succeed unless we fix this number one problem. We must end abortion. And when we save even a single life, we saw the number 2400 up here. When we save a single life, if all the efforts of all the local and state and national and international pro-life organizations, if all the efforts of all these people over all these years resulted in the saving of one single life, I'm talking about all the efforts of everybody combined, just ended up saving one single life, they would have all been more than worth it. As a matter of fact, we'll go further than that to say that if all the efforts of all the pro-life groups of all time tried only to save one single life and failed, every ounce of effort, every moment of time, every dollar of the resources spent would have been worth it. That's what we mean when we say that every life is a masterpiece, that it is of infinite value. It means that we are to be ready to give everything and anything to save that life. There is no price tag in terms of dollars and cents. There is no price tag in terms of the sacrifices we need to be willing to make to save those lives. No way to measure it. And hence the old saying from the rabbinical writings of our Jewish brothers and sisters, he who saves a single life, it is as if he saved the entire universe. When was it decided that you, as a human being, would come to be, would come to exist? When was that decided? Brothers and sisters, you, in all your human characteristics, were decided upon by God, in all your specific characteristics, for as long as God has been God. There was never a time when he didn't know about you. There was never a time when he didn't want you. There was never a time when he wasn't absolutely solid in his eternal decision that you, in all your characteristics, exactly the way you look and the color of your eyes and how you think and how tall you are, there wasn't a moment in eternity anywhere that God wasn't fully committed to you coming to exist. And you could say, well, how did I come to be? Well, my parents came together and they conceived a child and it was me. True enough, except that that is not enough to explain why you are you. Because when your parents came together and conceived a child, it didn't have to be you. It could have been any one of millions of possible siblings of yours. It still didn't have to be you. There's only one thing that explains why it's you. how it is that you came out of the nothingness in which you and I were a mere 100 years ago. And when we were in that nothingness, we couldn't ask to be born because we weren't there to ask. We couldn't earn it because we weren't there to do anything. And nobody could make it happen of their own choice either, because even if two people come together and they say, well, we're going to conceive a child, they don't know that it's going to be you. They don't know how to make it be you. There's only one explanation why each of us is here. From all eternity, Almighty God chose you. So where in the world do parents, doctors, government leaders, where in the world does anybody find the arrogance to say that once a human being has been conceived, that human being should not exist? Where on earth do we find that attitude? How can people bring themselves to say this? And how, furthermore, can we elect public servants who don't know the difference between serving the public and killing the public? If a public servant does not know the difference between serving the public and killing the public, he does not belong in public office. And we have, brothers and sisters, a moment now in America. I think it's providential that our event tonight, we didn't know this, of course, when the date was chosen and when I committed to come. And so we didn't know that we would be right in the middle of a Supreme Court confirmation hearing. But let me tell you how that connects with the work that Elizabeth New Life Center does and that all of you are here to support. We mentioned earlier the NIFLA case. Let me tell you this clear and straight and simple. The abortion industry is not content just to exist and do the work that it does, killing these babies. The abortion industry does not want your work to exist and does not want you doing the work you do to save them. They say, they invoke the word choice, but there is nothing about choice in what they do. They want the work of these pregnancy centers to cease. And the reason that they want it to cease is that for every one of those 2,400 lives and the countless thousands of other lives that have been and will be saved by this work, it's a loss of business for them. Pure and simple, it's as easy to understand as that. They do not want this work to continue, and so they will find every possible way to put up legal obstacles and financial obstacles and moral obstacles to this work continuing. And one of those ways is this tactic that they have devised of trying to, actually, if you know the psychology of projection, it's a big projection, it's an act of projection that they are engaged in by claiming that the medical clinics and the pregnancy centers that are doing this work of saving these lives are fake clinics, that they're dishonest, that they deceive, that they manipulate, that don't tell these mothers the truth about what's going on, that they're practicing medicine without a license. All these kinds of accusations. And because they lie, so they think, we have to post signs that say where people can get an abortion because we have to tell them that we don't provide abortion. If you think for one moment that the people who do this life-saving work are going to tell the people that they are there to save from abortion where to get an abortion, think again. Because it doesn't matter which way the law goes or which way the courts go, we will not obey such a mandate that violates our conscience. But that very attitude, that very commitment was under the microscope today in front of the whole world. In the hearings for this man, this qualified judge, who will, by the end of the month, take his seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. This, he will. this position that we take was under the microscope today. Because they want to know where a judge and a future justice of the court stands in matters of conflict between the laws of a nation and the conscience of a religious believer. That came up, it will come up again, because it's a question that's constantly comes up to the courts. By the way, the card fell for me too. This thing's alive, I think. It's a question that comes up constantly. And as a matter of fact, if you watch the hearings from today, you'll hear our organization, Priests for Life, mentioned in the hearing. And Judge Kavanaugh judged in our case. Priests for Life, when we challenged the HHS mandate and when we said to the Obama administration, you want us to include in our health insurance coverage for our employees of Priests for Life, coverage for abortion, we will not do so. We were one of the first groups to bring this into federal court, and we said, decide the way you want to decide, but we will obey God rather than men. We made it very clear. And Judge Kavanaugh decided in our favor, and he articulated today in his hearings why he did so. Because he said a citizen should never be put into a position where he or she is coerced by the government to violate his or her faith. Never. That's not what freedom of religion is. And my point here, my friends, is very simple. Very simple. The way that this hearing goes for the Supreme Court, the way that this election goes, when we will decide whether or not the members of the United States Senate will support nominees like President Trump is giving us, or will follow the Democratic Party line of supporting judges who are against life and for abortion and against religious freedom, this is the choice we're about to make, and this affects directly the work of pregnancy centers and medical clinics. It affects them directly. You cannot escape the battle, because even though the work of the centers is distinct from the political and legislative and judicial battles that the pro-life movement is involved in, nevertheless, they bring the fight to us when they try to impose on us actions that would violate our conscience as pregnancy centers or as pro-life citizens. They bring the fight to us. And so fight we must, and defend our rights we must. And one of the key ways we defend it is by electing the kinds of senators, by electing the kinds of presidents, by electing the kinds of governors, by electing the kinds of state legislators who understand these principles. The principles that the United States of America was founded on. What a country we have. We have a country whose governance, whose laws, whose policies, whose limitations of power are defined by three words. And this is unique in the history of the world. We the people. Because what happens with so many other governments throughout history is that the government issues a document telling the people what they can do and what they can't do. The United States of America was founded in such a way that we the people issued a document telling the government what it can and cannot do. That's freedom. We have the freedom, brothers and sisters, to declare to the world that the child is a masterpiece, that we are each a masterpiece, that the family is a masterpiece. You see the work that these centers do? It's serving the whole family. You saw that in Vivian's presentation. Abortion does not only destroy the child, it destroys the entire family. There is nothing more destructive of a family than abortion. And this book, Shockwaves, by the way, when you leave tonight, if you have another additional moment, by the table where you signed in, just on the wall to the side of that table is our Priest for Life table, and we've got literature for you, and we've got this book called Shockwaves. The Shockwaves of Abortion. What this book explores is that beyond the destruction of the baby, every abortion, without exception, is destructive of the mother, but not only the mother, the father, the grandparents. You ever reflect on how if a mother mourns her aborted children throughout her life, which she will and which she does, the grandparents do too. They lost a grandchild, and they might have been complicit in the abortion, which is a pain that follows them and a sin of which they need to repent, or they may be suffering the grief of having tried to stop the abortion and not been able to, or maybe they didn't even know it took place until it was too late. The grandparents, how about the siblings? So many young people growing up in America today who know mommy, daddy, they had one of my brothers and sisters killed. What do they think of me? And this is having a profound effect psychologically on our young people that we've only begun to understand. The shock waves of abortion, every abortion is affecting the whole family and beyond the family. What about the friend who takes her friend to have an abortion? If that mom comes to regret that abortion and has the pain and the loss and the guilt, what about the friend? She does too. He does too. Who paid for it? Who pressured her? Who drove her there? And you know who else suffers? The abortionists and their staff. And you know who else must mourn and grieve and who suffers from every single abortion that occurs? We do. The people who try to save those lives. We need to learn how to mourn and to grieve for the lives we could not save. Because if we don't properly mourn and grieve, we could be consumed by bitterness or discouragement. Brothers and sisters, the Father in all of this is key. Those of us who are men in this room, is it not an insult to us when people try to say to us that because we are men and because we cannot get pregnant, that we have nothing to say about abortion? What kind of man stands idly by with his hands in his pockets when babies are being killed? What kind of man does that? This is our issue as much as it is anyone's issue. One of the key reasons that moms end up having their babies aborted is that dads first abort their responsibility to that mom and to that child. That's the abortion that happens before the abortion. And not only that, but some of us as men are led to think that because and when it happens that we get a woman pregnant, that somehow the proper response for us is, well, dear, I'm not going to interfere with your choice. You have the right to make this decision. It's up to you. I'll support you in whatever you decide. And we somehow think that that's an appropriate response. It's not. Because what the mother hears in that response is, you're on your own. I'm going to decide this? You're leaving this up to me? I have the burden of the life or death of our child. You're leaving me alone with this decision? Oh, it sounds so nice. I'm going to respect your choice. No, brothers and sisters, that's not the proper response of a man. The proper response of a man, when a child has come into the picture, is that I am standing with you and with our child. And no matter what we have to do, we're going to work this out. But it is no option to kill our own child. We need men who are willing to be men. We need fathers in our society who are willing to be fathers. We need fathers, may I say, at this moment, also in the church. We need spiritual fathers who are willing to be men, to protect the vulnerable, to stand up and admit when they are wrong, and when they have seen something wrong being done, they say something. They speak up and they do something. We need men We need fathers. We need fathers in the family. We need fathers in the church. We need fathers in civil society. Once again, who are going to be public servants, who know the difference between serving the public and killing the public. The family is a masterpiece. Each of us individually and each baby is a masterpiece. And you know what? The United States of America, in its constitution, in its principles, in its founding documents, and in its glorious history, is a masterpiece too. And tonight, by some strange convergence of events, by some divine harmony and symphony of bringing notes and chords together, we are sitting here at a moment when we're supporting the marvelous work, life-saving work of Elizabeth New Life Center, when we're seeing before our very eyes the process of transition on our courts, when we are preparing for a national election, and when we are recommitting ourselves to be the kinds of men and women that our nation and our families deserve. Let me point out to you one more little tool that you might find helpful as you leave, if you want to get it, again, out there at that table. I have a little devotional prayer book here called Pro-Life Reflections for Every Day. And each day of the year, it has a little scripture quote or a quote from a saint. It has a short reflection and it has a short prayer. And this will nourish, as it nourishes your prayer life, it will nourish your pro-life commitment as well. Likewise, on that table I brought with me, because before coming here I was doing a voter training seminar over at Rua Woods. And we handed out this comparison sheet of the positions of the party platforms of our two major political parties. Very, very helpful for people as they prepare to vote. And also a little prayer card, a prayer campaign for our nation's elections. Again, this and more out at that table as you leave. And again, the book, Shockwaves, Healing the Shockwaves of Abortion. I end as I began by telling you how happy I am to be here and how happy I am to pledge this, that Priests for Life, as one of the world's largest and most visible pro-life organizations, is committed to working with all of you and each of you. As Elizabeth New Life Center, in your parishes, in your diocese, in your individual capacity, in your pro-life commitment, we are standing together. We are joining hands and minds and hearts together. We, brothers and sisters, are marching towards the victory of the culture of life. And mark my words, we will see that victory. We will see the day that these masterpieces of God's children are once again protected when they're in the womb, just like they're protected when they are outside the womb. We will have events like this. We will have banquets like this, celebrating that victory. And this will not be in some unknown future. Many of us here in this room will be organizing and attending those victory banquets. This victory is closer than you think. Keep pushing harder than ever, giving more generously than ever, making more sacrifices than ever, speaking more loudly than ever. Because the closer we get to victory, the more frantic and unpredictable the other side is going to be. And so as we see that victory coming closer, we don't press less hard, we press more hard. And let's not say to our young people, well, we're going to leave this battle to you to bring it over the finish line. Oh no. We're saying to our young people, so many of you here tonight, take our hand right now and let's walk together over that finish line of victory for the unborn, of the end of abortion, and of the spreading to every family the gift of new life. God bless you. Thank you for having me. Okay?
Thanks for coming up.
Yes. Thanks a lot.
I have to follow that. Thank you, Father Pavone. If that doesn't get you excited, if that doesn't make you want to go out and do something more, make a difference, I'm not sure you're in the right place. Because that man is a man of God who was sent here for a mission, and we are blessed to be able to hear that. So I just want to thank you for being here with us tonight and for blessing us with that.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.